This is Central Time. I'm Veronica Rickert.
And I'm Rob Farah. Today, commonly known as President's Day, especially if you're looking at ads for the new car, mattress, or refrigerator. The third Monday in February that we think of as President's Day was actually originally pegged to George Washington's birthday on February 22nd. Later, it was expanded to honor another president with a February birthday, Abraham Lincoln.
Brady Carlson joins us now for a look at the afterlives of presidents and what happens to their historical images after they pass away. Brady's a reporter and the host of All Things Considered on WPR. He's also the author of the book Dead Presidents, an American adventure into the strange deaths and surprising afterlives of our nation's leaders. Brady, welcome to Central Time.
Thanks for having me.
Well, how did you first get interested in not just the lives of presidents, but the afterlives of presidents?
Well, when I first started traveling to these sites, it was because that was as close as I could get to a Thomas Jefferson or an Abraham Lincoln. I thought this is as close as I could get to meeting the living presidents. But the more time I spent at the grave sites and at the monuments and the memorials, I realized there were stories about how each of these sites, each of these monuments came together. And those were really a story that were part of the present, that those stories continued into today, not only as part of their stories, but part of our stories, how we understand the people we've chosen to lead the country and how we look at the presidency as a job and as an institution in our politics and in our culture.
And it sounds like this became not just a Brady obsession, but a family thing for you. Your family came along. What did they think of this quest you were on?
They thought it was a bit morbid, which is understandable. But I think they got a kick out of seeing these often places that are hiding in plain sight. I mean, an obvious example is Abraham Lincoln's tomb in Springfield, Illinois, which is a really, really solemn place, understandably so, and a place that lots of people go visit. It's one of the most heavily visited cemeteries in America. But to learn about the attempt to steal Lincoln's body and hold it for ransom in the 1870s, and the efforts that people went to, often very secret lengths, to keep his body intact and to actually, it's under 12 feet of concrete today to keep it safe from potential future grave robbers, to find those kinds of stories, I think, made it more fun for all of us. It was a little odd for my now oldest son. He was my only kid at the time. He thought all presidents were dead. And so we would explain to him later on, he had a chance to see then President Obama in person. And he kept saying, he was president long ago. He died. And we had to say, no, he's still alive. The other guys died.
Some chronology things that the kids were working out with the presidents.
Yeah, when you're two, I guess it's harder to understand the scope of history.
Well, you brought up Lincoln and going to see his memorial place, his resting place. And I read in your book about how you were surprised that some people were just, they weren't really affected by it. They were more there as tourists. And I had that same reaction. I went to the Lincoln Memorial in D.C., not his actual, you know, resting place, his grave. But it did seem to have the solemnity, but it was clear that not everybody felt it. I mean, how do people process it when they go to these sites?
It depends on the person, I think. There are people who are very emotionally invested in visiting the Lincoln Memorial. I mean, that's one of the truly iconic American statues in the Lincoln Memorial, and it's got some of his most eloquent words written on the sides of the building. You can stand in the spot where Martin Luther King Jr. said, I have a dream. And you can also be surrounded by dozens and dozens of people who are taking selfies of themselves. So, I mean, people come to the presidential sites for a lot of different reasons. And some of them are historical and some of them are, quote unquote, respectful. And others are just for entertainment or fun or just to document that they had been to a well-known place. And I don't really have a problem with that, like I did when I was 10 and I was offended by the people who were not really taking the Abraham Lincoln tomb as seriously as I was. But it also shows that we have a lot of different reactions to the presidency as a job and the people who have held that job.
Well, as you wrote this book, which presidents stand out to you for how revered they were, maybe both at the time and shortly after their death and now?
I think the most interesting story to me, I really like stories about how our views of history change. And so I thought the story of how Thomas Jefferson has changed in the course of history was a fascinating story. Thomas Jefferson, of course, the author of the Declaration of Independence, he did the Louisiana Purchase. I mean, there's, you can go on and on and on about Thomas Jefferson's intellectual and political successes. But over time, our understanding of him and his life have changed so much because of what we've learned about the institution of slavery, how that institution perpetuated itself at Thomas Jefferson's plantation, Monticello, and the evidence that he had a relationship and fathered children by one of the enslaved women at Monticello, Sally Hemings. That was something that was extremely controversial among historians for centuries, and it was only really in the last few decades that people started taking that idea seriously, that maybe there was more to the story of Thomas Jefferson and Sally Hemings than the whispered rumors that had always been out there. And now you see the people who run Monticello are now restoring the room they believe Sally Hemings lived in, and they're showing that as an official piece of Thomas Jefferson and Monticello history. So her story is now coming back out there, not just his.
Interesting. Well, and you also say that if you want to start at the beginning, you start with Washington. This is not only the first president, but an incredibly revered president, maybe second only, and that's arguable, to Abraham Lincoln. And his afterlife, it was pretty interesting there. It sounds like he didn't want a big to-do. People mourned like crazy anyway. He wanted to be married at Mount Vernon. Congress said, no, you're going to be buried in Washington. And it was a process.
It was a huge process, and it was a very revealing process, because more or less everything that we see in the world of dead presidents starts with George Washington. Remember, the country started with this idea that we wanted to have a chief executive and not a king. And Washington thought of everything he did in that light. How can I best perpetuate this idea of a leader chosen by the people, who represents the people and holds power for a very finite period of time before giving it to someone else, rather than establishing perpetual power in a single individual or a single job? And so he wanted to have a private funeral, a private burial, a private life outside of national politics. And people were so tied into George Washington as a national hero, the father of the country, our first president, that they really couldn't let him do that. George Washington was, by some accounts, so influential in the early days of the country that his force of personality was almost the only thing that kept North, South, the expanding parts of the country, people who very strongly disagreed on a lot of issues, kept them all working on this one single experiment. Let's all stick it out and be one country. And when he was gone, well, maybe that unity wasn't going to hold anymore because his force of personality wasn't there to keep everybody on the same page. So they essentially turned George Washington into something larger than life after he died. They created this mythical figure. This is the point where we have the biography come out with all these not real stories about George Washington chopping the cherry tree down and saying, I cannot tell a lie. Stories, paintings about George Washington ascending into heaven as a sort of demigod. That's actually what you can see if you go to the U.S. Capitol building in Washington and you look up to the inside of the Capitol dome in the rotunda that you see. It's called the Apotheosis of Washington. So George Washington becomes this huge figure. And with that, there goes the idea of the president being a private figure who takes power for a short period of time and then returns to private life. Once you're a president, always a president. And that's sort of the long and the short of George Washington's political and mythical rise. And his physical death was a little more complicated. He had been buried on his plantation, Mount Vernon, in an old tomb that was right next to the Potomac River, and that was prone to flooding. He had asked that there be a new tomb built further inland so that his bones could rest and not be washed down the river. But the plantation was inefficient and unprofitable, and it took some 30 years before that was actually done. And in the meantime, somebody tried to break into the tomb and steal his bones, and there were lots of problems along those lines. So George Washington got what he wanted in a sense, but it took a long time.
We're talking with Brady Carlson right now. He's a reporter and the host of All Things Considered at WPR. And he's the author of the book Dead Presidents, An American Adventure into the Strange Deaths and Surprising Afterlives of Our Nation's Leaders. And speaking of strange deaths, let's talk about James Garfield, an untimely end there, unfortunate, and there are many kind of like this, where you wonder how did this happen, but tell us about James Garfield.
Well, James Garfield is almost completely forgotten today, and that's in large part because he was assassinated so early on in his term. At least that's the official story. Assassinated is probably overstating it. He certainly was shot twice by a deranged office seeker named Charles Guiteau in a Washington, D.C. train station. But what really did him in was neither of those bullets, but the incompetent medical care that he got from a man whose name was, and this is his name, not his title, Dr. Willard Bliss. He was named for the doctor who attended to his mother while he was being born. Dr. Bliss did not believe in germ theory, which was a relatively new thing, but had been widely accepted in Europe, not so much by American doctors. He and a number of the other doctors who attended to Garfield would check for where the bullets had gone by poking him with unsterilized fingers. Those unsterilized fingers introduced germs into the president's body. He spent the next few months before he died in great pain, agony. They fed him the foods that his stomach could not handle. They gave him whiskey that they thought would help. It didn't help. And so poor James Garfield was done in by his doctors. And interestingly enough, when Charles Guiteau, the assassin, went on trial for the murder of the president, he defended himself by saying, "The doctors are the ones who killed him. I just shot him." And that didn't go over well with the jury. He was eventually put to death. But it was confirmed later on in the autopsy and then by medical historians since that James Garfield was killed more by the medical care that was supposed to protect him from those bullets than the bullets themselves.
And Brady, just briefly as we wrap up, you ponder a question. What is the job of a dead president? Do you have an answer for that?
The job of a dead president is to help us understand how we look at ourselves and how we look at the president, who is the one person who we all elect, the one person who represents all of us. So the more we understand, the more we look at whether we build something as huge as Mount Rushmore, or we're carving giant faces of our leaders into the mountain, or just the ways that we put presidents' names on schools or streets, that tells us something about the importance that we place on this particular job and the unique place that it has in our lives.
Brady, thanks so much for talking.
It was my pleasure. Thank you.
Brady Carlson is a reporter and the host of All Things Considered on WPR. He joined us to talk about his book called Dead Presidents, an American adventure into the strange deaths and surprising afterlives of our nation's leaders.